robertscottbell.com, and you can go to robertscottbell.com, and it'll stream on YouTube Live and Facebook Live tomorrow, and it's also available through my radio syndicator, GCN or GCNlive.com, and that starts at 1 o'clock Eastern, and that's 10 a.m. Pacific, but it'll be available for download later, too, or just live listen through all the podcast sites that are out there. And there's a listen page at robertscottbell.com. It'll say listen, and it'll give you all the outlets that carry it later if you don't catch it live.
All righty. Freddie, take it away.
hello, Robert. I don't have any questions, actually. I put my hand up to remind Mel to start the recording. Sorry.
Ah.
Well, I think
we missed all that.
Well, yeah, and yeah, Freddie. Next time, send. Oh, there are two emails. Oh boy. Oh boy, Freddie. You're a whip, Freddie. And no, I did not until after we talked about the virus. I don't want this going to be the world. And this is for all of us, not for the rest of the world. But the rest of this call is being recorded, and we are now handling messages. I got another email. I think it's going to be from the other person on the other side of the ocean, yes. All right, well, the girls on the other side were very aware that I didn't start the call. All right, so, Timothy, do you have a question for Robert?
Hey, Robert. Thanks for coming on the show again. It's always a pleasure to hear your voice and also the, you know, the content that you're putting out there. And it's really, really interesting. Thank you very much indeed. One question I had wasn't related to the previous topic that we're talking about. Was is in relation to when people get symptoms of nausea. Now, just from self-diagnosis and from looking at my own symptoms and conversations with Mel and other people, I understand that it's due to the diet process. And I was wondering if you could perhaps elucidate a bit more into that process itself, because what I noticed is that if one introduces something into the system, let's say oregano oil, or you know, the, you know, the reason why we build up the kind of MMS is because of the fact that we are trying to mitigate the kind of symptoms of the diarrheal symptoms and work our way up slowly. But is it correct in my understanding that the nausea is a result of gas, which is as a result of die-off of pathogens and other kind of organisms? Is that how it works? Is it kind of like a gaseous kind of eradication? Or is it simply the gas is a byproduct of the pathogen dying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Timothy, it's an all of the above answer, because the triggers for nausea are clearly, you know, evolutionary. We will talk about life itself. Not that I'm a guy that believes in what they call evolution per se, in a Darwinian sense, but in terms of adaptation for survival. The trigger of the nauseous feeling should be something to communicate to us that what we have put in our body either is bad for us, or, as you point out, you're putting something that is good for you, but it is triggering a metabolic interaction with something that is present that is now making itself known, either through a gaseous die-off from its own existence, or a toxicological, you know, spewing out of certain toxins in the dying phase. And these trigger pathways that trigger the sensation or the actual event, you know, in a serious nausea event where you actually throw up. You can feel nauseous when you have diarrhea in the lower GI and not throw up, and then you'll have a loose stool and things. Again, the body is throwing a lot of liquid into that to dilute and move it on out fast as a rapid means of escape. But in all of those cases, we're dealing with a liver that may be congested and not able to handle a die-off scenario as fast as you would like it to, based on the accumulated toxins and waste or other microbiological life forms, et cetera. So homeopathically, the most indicated remedy directly for nausea is the thing that can make you throw up if you took it in a syrup form, Ipecac. But the homeopathic form of Ipecac can kind of tamp down some of those symptoms, not in a suppressive way, because if you still need to throw up, it's not going to stop you from throwing up, but you will feel better right away. The other remedies to consider include Nux Vomica, which is often its impact is on the liver and the stomach. And so a lot of it is when the stomach is reacting in the upper GI that you'll have the nauseous feeling and maybe the need to expulse that way, which is a very violent response that's only available for the most part to acute Leo people that are otherwise generally healthy, not so devastated that they can't react so strongly. And my other favorite liver remedies, and I talk about them in my lecture on COVID crazy, that one I mentioned, I should say I have a homeopathic lecture too, lecture on demand at Trinity called Clinical Homeopathy 101 Plus, where I talk about the other two key liver remedies, polycrust remedies. Nux vomica is one of them. Homeopathically, I always look to Bryonia alba, B-R-Y-O-N-I-A, and Chelidonium. It's a celandine plant in a homeopathic form. And that can minimize the need for a nauseous type reaction or minimize the sensation. If it's not going to be a full-on expulsion through the upper GI, that'll get you through via support for the liver, the sensation and the feeling and the necessity for it, because you'll begin to move things out of your body much faster, hopefully mostly through the urinary tract and also the colon and solid waste.
All righty. Wow. Good enough, Timmy?
Yeah, that was awesome. Thanks very much. I mean, I think I was just very curious as to the whole, you know, because a lot of, as you say at the beginning of your answer there, you know, when the body indicates to you that you need to throw up effectively and to vomit, it's usually the brain signals to yourself, obviously, that, like, this is something that needs to be expelled. Don't take that again. You must have eaten something badly. And it's looking at it from a new perspective, like looking at it from a perspective, well, actually, this is your body way of saying that whatever you're doing is working. Obviously, you know, dial it down or put it into moderation, depending on how severe the symptoms are. But it's fascinating how the signals that we've become kind of programmed to, you know, don't do that again, this is bad, etc. It's actually looking at it from a different way and realizing that you are able to get a response from it to what is and what isn't working effectively, or to what extent something may be working and to adjust accordingly. So thank you so much for that, and I certainly will check out your other material on your website and the lectures that you mentioned, Robert.
Yeah, Jane Timothy, again, it's brilliant because we're all learning the language of ourselves, and it's something that most of us were robbed of, the ability to learn that language from early on, because our parents, God bless them, they turned us over to the medical church. They didn't know. I mean, that was part of the 20th century, the movement away from God and spirit into a molecular reductionist viewpoint, and how these so-called scientists were somehow the new demigods, and we just worshiped them and trusted them blindly to our detriment. It's not to say there's never a place for modern medicine and doctors, but I would relegate it primarily to emergency trauma interventions or surgical interventions when necessary. But beyond that, again, the concept of poisoning people back to health is not a good plan. But we're learning the language of ourselves that many of us did not learn when we were children. And that's been a big part of my journey. And I hope to impart that concept, which, Timothy, it sounds like we have, because you got it. And I hope everybody else gets it, too. Not nausea. That's not what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
No. They all get it because we preach the same things.
Yes.
All right, Nancy. Welcome, Nancy. You have a question for Robert.
Well, I have not been afraid of the virus because of dealing with what I was already dealing with when this came about. And I know God has reasons for everything, and that's where I look to for my understanding and for my help. And to know that there's people out there that's learning the truth and knowing the truth means a lot.
All right. Well, thank you, Nancy. This one, she'll have questions. Go ahead, Rockin' Robin. Unmute yourself, Robin. All right. All right, we'll come back to you. Yolanta, do you have a question? Any question for Robert Scott Bell?
Well, actually, this has to do with Monk Allen's. Would, like, the boron tablets, would that help the Monk Allen's?
Okay, I'm not sure.
Did she say boron?
I don't know. That's why I asked her to repeat.
Yes, boron. That's what I heard, boron. I read somewhere about boron, B-O-R-O-N.
Yeah. Well, it's a trace element, but I don't have information on utilizing boron as a treatment for Morgellons. I would roll it and defer it back to everybody here. Has anybody had any experience with that? Because that's not something I've done.
No, it doesn't sound like anything that we're going to recommend. All right, here it comes. I knew that was going to happen. All right, give us the short version. Go ahead, Pete.
I'm sorry, I had myself muted. I just wanted to let everyone know, Mel and Robert, they're getting adequate support from boron in the Magnifical that's in their protocol right now. So that's a great question for your caller. She's let her know you're already getting boron, and it is a trace mineral, so you're getting adequate support in the Magnifical of Mel's protocol. Just want to let you guys know that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When it comes to the protocol, that gentleman dissected it. There are a couple others that have looked at it very closely, but Peter is the one who was screaming at all of us, even before he got better, to read the labels. He's laughing. All right, let's see. Hey, Robin, are you ready? I don't know. Maybe she fell off asleep. All right, we'll keep moving on. She'll put her hand up when she gets up. All right, Carrie Ann and Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Mel and everyone, and Robert and Pete. Pleasure having you guys here. Robert, very powerful information on your show and what you're not obviously just now discovering, but what you have discovered, and it's really coming to fruition. It's one of those areas where unraveled this twine here. How big is this yarn here? Ball of yarn that we're going to be unraveling. It's just going to keep coming out, this herd immunity, and it's going to eventually get to that point where it's a bubble. It's going to burst at some point, and it's going to implode. And I think, once the selection, everything's done in the U.S., it'll revert back to that, because that's obviously been keeping people's attention. So thank you for the information.
Of course. Thank you. I'm glad to be able to communicate it as much as I do. And it's as much a help to me to be able to do it, to know that you guys are out there as well, hearing it and hopefully sharing it.
All right. Chrissy?
Hi, Robert. It's always a delight when you're on. I just love listening to you. You're the way that you talk about everything and about, and it kind of echoes a lot of my feelings about what you were saying about the scientists and the church and the way they were brought up to believe in them and how they've really let people badly down. In the United Kingdom, I think they get about 4 hours of nutrition advice, and they never talk about probiotics when they give antibiotics. It's not holistic. And we think we've evolved, but because the majority of people have been kind of socialized from an early age, as you say, to look up to them as if they're omnipresent. And it's badly letting people down, the pharmaceutical industry. And yet they're so scathing of a lot of herbal medicine that was around thousands and thousands of years before all this pharmaceutical stuff. I mean, there's a place for pharmaceutical medicine, as you say, but it's quite a warped world that we live in, so it's just very exciting to hear people that have their finger on the pulse and know what they're talking about and are moving and encouraging other people to move in the right direction and think for themselves and see beyond what we're being brainwashed to think. What I wanted to ask you, Robert, was that I have an offer of of moving into a house that I'd very much like to move into, but I've been rather despairing about it in the last few days because the people that own it have been saying they're going to fit a smart meter into it, even though I tried to say very subtly that I didn't want one, that didn't work. Then I had to say it was not good for my health, that didn't work. Then I had to be specific, which I didn't want to do, and say that I'm EMS and Wi-Fi sensitive and it would make me ill, to which they're saying they probably still will fit it in. And of course, that's a sensitive thing for me because having this illness that we've all got, toxic disease basically, and not being listened or heard, and then obviously with being EMS sensitive, and being made to feel as if I'm a bit kooky or slightly eccentric or a bit mad. But what I was going to ask is, I was thinking that I can't, I was feeling that I might have to give it up because I can't move in and have all that radio waves. I was very sick with Wi-Fi and stuff, and I've been around smart meters before, and I just, I can't do it. And I thought, I can't go there. And then today I started looking up about Faraday cages and how you need to earth it down to the ground. And in the United Kingdom, there are actually the smart meters, it's better, well, it's still not a good thing, but at least in America, I think that a lot of the time they're outside your property, whereas here they can be in a, you know, right outside the bedroom in a wee cupboard, you know, so it's very near people's sleeping quarters. So I was just wanting to know what you would think about a Faraday cage and something to earth it, and possibly because it'll be on maybe on a back wall or something, and I could maybe getting some kind of shielding material on the wall behind the smart meter. Do you think that that would help me a lot? Do you think personally that I'll be able to? I'd be pretty devastated if I couldn't take the property because of just this one thing. But just if I could get your advice on what you would suggest to actually severely reduce the EMF and the radio frequencies coming from it, I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, a true Faraday cage, you know, you would be able to measure the blockage of all wireless signals, and you wouldn't be able to receive or transmit them outside of that cage. So if you're legitimate, it might be difficult to do if it's right on the wall outside where you're sleeping. But I know that there are people that do that. I've talked, I think, a little bit before about the technology I use, and I wouldn't be without it, which was a young scientist who developed this in Germany. And now they've run the double-blind placebo-controlled test with more even coming that produces a torus field of electrons in your space. You know, there are various sizes, the key technology, QI technology. The shield is done, you know, basically for one room if you can't get the whole house covered and you just travel from room to room with it or place it, you know, when you're in bed right next to you. And that has a measurable capacity to what they call depolarize the field. It doesn't stop the signal, but it makes it harmless to you. And by flooding your body with these electrons externally and internally, it also facilitates mitochondrial production, which is a big problem, the energy of the mitochondria in all who suffer with Morgellons as well. So we would see benefit with or without the smart meters outside your room. There are whole house key home cell and the key max that'll, you know, that can go upwards of 50,000, 100,000 square feet. So I don't know that we all live in those places, but if we're surrounded by things that we have no control over, it's, to me, proven technology, not just muscle tested into reality. And my experience with my wife has been so profound that even if they didn't have all the science on it, I would not want to be without it. But there's a lot of validations toward it. And I'll certainly let you know if we have another webinar coming up on that topic. I know Mel had asked before and we had missed some of the windows, but I think we'll do another one, hopefully in this calendar year, where you can learn even more if you haven't already.
Okay, well, if you have a show and a link, I put it up before, but send it again, and I'll put it up again.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to be interviewing the young scientist from Germany again because there's more peer-reviewed double-blind studies coming out on a lot of different things. But to answer the question, if you were in an environment like that where you know you're being hammered with electromagnetic frequencies that are harmful, I have no doubt that the QI, the key technology, they call it WaveGuard, is something that would prevent you from suffering in the presence of it. In other words, it would render it neutral and safe to be in that environment if you had to be. And you can still utilize wireless technologies, and it would not be harmful the way it is right now.
Well, in her financial position, she's going to have to ask Santa for Christmas.
Right, I understand. And you know, as we've talked about before, you know, prayers sent sincerely are answered, but, you know, often answered in ways we didn't expect. So we just don't want to be the obstacle to the gifts that Spirit is always trying to give us.
Okay, well, I hope that answered the question, Chrissy. I'm going to keep on keeping on. We'll try to come around twice. Okay, let's see. Oh, boy. Okay, Barbara. Question?
Yes. I do, actually. Thank you for coming and speaking with us today. I really appreciate it. you know, it's what you're saying, what you've said kind of bears out something that I had read, which was that they were wondering where are all their heart attack cases and all the other mm-hmm. medical problems that a hospital usually sees, which of course makes me wonder how much of what they're calling COVID are really these problems. So, although this makes sense, so my question basically is, if it's not COVID, what is going on?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a number of speculations, and I don't think any of them are necessarily wrong per se, but they might be one aspect of many multifactorial issues, right? Because, you know, this is, we have to deprogram ourselves from this idea that there's one cause, therefore there's one cure. Uh-huh. You know, every one of us is unique and different. In the same environment, from the same household, you have one child that suffers, you know, devastating allergies, another child has none, and the same environment is there. So we all have strengths and weaknesses. So there's going to be a different cause or multiple causes in each case or in each area.
Okay.
Now, there has been speculation that in Wuhan, of course, it's not even speculation, the air pollution was just so thick. I mean, you could land a plane on it. You can see satellite imagery in the year prior to the so-called COVID outbreak there. And then when everything shut down, it's like the air cleared and there was no smog. And it's like, you can't tell me that breathing that every day is not have a negative impact
yeah.
on the respiratory system. And then you ask, well, what other triggers puts a lot of people over the edge? There's also evidence to show that they were engaged in experimental or mandatory vaccine campaigns for many different things
uh-huh.
there in China.
Right.
That could have been one
right.
of the triggers. Also, there has been discussion that Wuhan was a test city for the fifth generation wireless technologies, what's known as 5G, that they flipped uh-huh. the switch on that a month before all of this happened. So you begin to see it's a cascade of events that roll until suddenly, boom, a large segment of the population succumbs to varying degrees, and there may be some that succumb to the point where they die. But then again, we look at the deaths here in America and New York, we could argue, in the elderly population, in nursing homes and home care facilities and things, who were already very ill, that many of them were died because of the treatment itself, the medical treatment, the drugs, and or the ventilators, where at least
yeah.
3 out of 5 or 6 out of 10 people don't recover, and it could be higher than that once you're put on a ventilator. So we can go to each area where they said there was a massive outbreak and a massive death, and it may be slightly different in terms of explanation. Arthur Furstenberg wrote a book called The Invisible Rainbow, and he goes back into the, I think, the 1800s and talks about every leap we've made in electrical-type technologies, first wired and then wireless, including radar, has been associated with some massive outbreak or pandemic. So the invisible, when I speak of the invisible when it comes to germs, it's not so much the concern, but when it comes to energy, electromagnetic energy, that becomes a reality when we realize that we are all electromagnetic beings. Yes, we have physical body and physical cells, but they all, you know, resonate in frequencies. And if there are discordant frequencies that harm the function at that level, those are the invisible causes of illness that are not germs per se, but are waves, measurable waves or frequencies that can be very harmful to our health. And that also means that if we harness the power of resonant frequencies in a positive manner, like Royal Raymond Rife, or others that are using quantum signaling, and homeopathy, of course, we can help to repair and restore the integrity. Now, if we continue to live in the field of invisible negative content, we suffer. We don't know why until we wake up one day and say, oh, my gosh, there's a smart meter outside my house, or there's a cell tower over there, or the Wi-Fi is on 24/7, and that's invisible, but it's impacting me. And when you turn it off, you feel better. Or when you get the technology, you know, I talk about the QI technology, you suddenly go, wow, that's a major difference. I have energy again, and I don't have the headaches, and I sleep well. These are very tangible responses and results to invisible countering the invisible. But The Invisible Rainbow by Arthur Furstenberg would be an excellent read if you want to look into Dr. Thomas Cowan's latest book as well that he wrote with Sally Fallon from the Weston Price Foundation. That gives a lot of information, too, about dissolving the illusion of germs as causative agents of disease.
All righty. We're going to keep on keeping on. Miles. Morning.
Morning. How are you?
Fine. fine. You have a question for Robert?
No, I don't think so.
All right, it can be about anything.
No, I don't have any questions. I just have my own opinions, but I'm listening.
Okay. Donald, good morning, Donald.
Yeah, good morning, Mel, and thank you for being here, Robert Scott Bell. I appreciate it. Can you please tell me what Morgellons disease does to the human blood?
Well, I don't know because I haven't personally investigated the blood of those suffering with Morgellons other than to hear from other practitioners, and I would think, Mel, that the expertise on that subject matter might be handled within this group already, but I don't have a definitive answer on what it's doing to the blood or what has proceeded in terms of blood toxicity. Again, we go to deficiency on and on. There's still, to me, a lot of mysteries that y'all know more than me about regarding this because you're dealing with it every day and in every call, even when I'm not here.
Okay.
Alrighty. Donald always has very, very interesting questions.
Well, and I will, you know, I could say in terms of blood, we always look at iron, for instance, and it could be arguable that we have too much iron, but more often than not, they'll diagnose not enough iron, and, you know, you get this anemia diagnosis. But I've done a number of shows with Morley Robbins, a good friend, and he talks about the inability to utilize iron properly in the absence of adequate copper. And so in a general sense, when we look at blood, I would look at copper as being the main culprit in its deficiency primarily. I mean, you can get too much copper as well, but mostly deficiency, like many minerals, unless, you know, if you have copper pipes and other things, you might have too much copper in your system. But the homeopathic remedy is cuprum metallicum. That's copper in Latin. And once you have a dietary source of good copper, I don't want synthetic chelates, amino acid chelates in supplemental form. That can be harsh, too much, and not appropriate. But, you know, I take bee pollen every day as a source of copper. If you're not a vegetarian, if you eat meat, you know, the liver, a calf liver, beef liver, whatever it is, or you can get it desiccated if you can't handle the taste of that, that's a good source of dietary copper in terms of the health of the blood and the function of all that iron that may be dysregulated in the absence of copper. So for whatever that's worth, maybe that's a little helpful, regardless of Morgellon status.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's see. Robin, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, well, we skipped you. I thought maybe you fell asleep. Would you like to ask a question of Robert?
No, I don't have any questions at this time, but I'm listening.
Okay, well, you all right, dear?
Yeah, I had those off.
You what?
I did doze off.
Oh, we knew it. The good news is we don't have a recording of you snoring. All right. Pete has got something to add. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly share with Robert. Robert, I've seen a body of literature actually over on Carnicom's site. What's happening in the blood is iron disruption. Actually, it's this bacteria is changing it from a ferrous Fe2 to a ferric Fe3, and instead of attaching oxygen, it's attaching ligands, however you say that. So I just wanted to let you know there is that's what's happening. It's iron disruption and protein disruption with our disease also.
Yeah.
And I've seen a body of work from Carnicom that supports that. That's all, Mel. I just wanted to enlighten. And the last thing I would say is copper. Again, you're getting adequate support from copper in Mel's protocol. That pathway is critical. So, yeah, just want to let you know about the iron disruption with our disease, Robert.
That's great. And yeah, that's a brilliant analysis that's known. Again, I look toward the minerals more than a microbial interface because the microbial interface in my experience is opportunistic when our minerals are out of balance. So what is that magic or sweet spot in terms of what is the form of copper coming in the supplemental program? I don't know it. I haven't reviewed it. But the form does matter if we're not getting the adequate response, even though we say we get enough. If it's not happening, I always look, is the form appropriate for the body to utilize it fully, or is it somehow synthesized via amino acid chelate process that's not necessarily, it's trying to mimic nature, but it doesn't always work the way we think it should.
Yeah, absolutely. And the real challenge, therefore, is to keep it in the chelated form, not to supplement with additional iron. We got to figure out how to keep it in the chelated form. And I see this protocol as working because that happens when you reduce the infection load. And the specific cross-domain bacteria that Carnicom is isolated is Cockle. It is gram-negative, and it is it does function in both aerobic and anaerobic environments. So it's a big challenge to understand the iron disruption. I do help people with mineral support, as you mentioned, some trace mm-hmm. mineral support. Additional support, aside from what we're getting from Mel's protocol, does seem to provide energy for people. And then those people that have thyroid disruption, I've also seen as some help for them, and including myself, with fatigue, with a little additional iodine support. So there you go.
Okay. Well, great. I'm glad it's helping. And like you said, that's my bottom line, is I want people to get well.
That's all we all want here. All right, here comes Ruth Ann. Ruth Ann, come in.
Hi, Robert. Thank you for coming, taking your time and spending with us today. I'm back where Christy was about, do you know if the 5G has been used widely in the United States? I live in Michigan, and I don't know, mm-hmm. you know, if we have that operating here.
Well, it depends if you're in the city of Detroit or a major city, Lansing, otherwise Grand Rapids. That's where they're focusing the rollout of the fifth generation wireless or Wi-Fi technologies.
I live in Kalamazoo. About an hour south of Grand Rapids.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer. I mean, there are sites online about where 5G is already on and active that can be found. And I apologize. I know that Magda Havas is one of the names of the research scientists that I've interviewed. That's, if you search the name Magda, MagdaHavas, she would probably have links to that.
What was her last name?
Havas.
Okay.
Yeah. And especially the cities. I mean, ultimately, they want to do this via satellite technology where they cover every square inch of the globe.
Right.
And what do we do then? And that's why, you know, we have to respond with appropriate technology to protect us. And we can't walk around in a Faraday cage. That's not functional.
No.
But there are, you know, as I talk about the key technology, making it possible for us to interact in a world that has gone mad because we're in love with technology without consciousness, you know, and that's where it goes wrong.
Yeah. I've got another question for you. Of course I have more gallons or I wouldn't be on here, but I am tired a lot of the time, really tired.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked a little bit about it. Do you have any idea, you or Peter, because I don't know what's causing it, and we've tried some things, but it hasn't seemed to overcome it.
Okay, well, before they can even answer that question, they'd have to have a little bit more knowledge on your whole history. Okay? So...
I'm not going to go into all of that now. There's not.
No, I know, but that's what I mean. There's a multitude of issues that have created the issue that you're discussing. And without them knowing them all, but I'll tell you what, you want to put them all down on paper and I'll send them to both of them and then let them respond.
Okay.
We just don't have the kind of time right now.
Right. I understand.
I mean, I know your whole story. But it took me more than a month to get it all.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, and in a general sense, for everybody's sake, liver congestion is my number one priority to target. When the liver is functioning again, the energy can flow again. But there are other layers and complexities, as you said, Mel, that are unique to each of us. I mentioned mitochondrial function and, lacking of minerals there, of course, plays a role. We've talked about chromium before on the air, but I think also the more we learn about the electromagnetic fields that are disrupting us and their negative impact on mitochondrial function, and that's energy production. And that, you know, goes into, we have to counter that either by removing ourselves far, far away from these impediments, these invisible impediments, or again, address them head on with counter technologies that are protective and safe. And, you know, this is an ongoing learning process for all of us.
I think that most of her issues are physical, and they've been on for an awful long time before she finally got so sick that she got more gallons. So for her, the youngin is bigger than most. And she's doing fairly well, but this is an issue. But it's related to so many other parts. Like I said, she'll write an email. I'll send it to both you and Pete, and you both can respond. But to do that now would take the whole show, and that's not going to happen.
Sure.
Karen, come on, Karen. Welcome, Karen, the librarian.
Oh, good morning, or depending on where you are. Thank you, Robert Scott Bell, for being with us. My question has to do with, like, eye pain and discomfort from screen time, like computer and laptop. I bought some glasses. They seem to help some. So I just, your information on that whole issue would be great.
Well, the blue blocking, you know, that light is very fatiguing to the eyes. So having, you know, filters on your glasses or lenses or on the computer screens themselves, it can also be the EM fields that you're working with and around, regardless of eye strain. You could have your eyes closed and you might still have that negative impact because of that too. So that's a consideration. You know, we've sprayed the silver hydrosol in the eyes to reduce inflammation and, you know, kind of stimulate regeneration as well. And there are certainly herbal blends. Dr. Christopher's out of Utah has excellent oral and local topical use for the eyes for that. But, you know, there's a number of reasons why the eye strain may occur. I mean, one of them is just using it without the protection, at least from that starting point. See how those glasses or blockers work for you. If that's enough, great. If not, then look at these other options.
Okay.
Let me just interject here, Karen, for a second, and then I'll let you go. I have an Asus laptop that was built for me by someone who was the head of the technology for Hewlett Packard for many years as his thank you for restoring his health. And it is a blue screen, but I have it hooked up to an HP 27-inch screen because it's just easier for me to read. And the screen is not blue, and I never look to the blue screen. I always look to this kind of light tan or gray tan screen because it's the other one is it's like more penetrating to the eye, I think.
Yeah.
So the first thing I'd make sure is that my screen's not blue.
Okay.
Go ahead, Cam.
So even though I have like a screensaver on it or something, I can listen to the call again to get the other names. I believe I wrote them down accurately. So, or I could send an email with more questions. So, and I think it's the light too, because sometimes when I'm on it too late at night, then it might be the light aspect too. I had read that sometimes it can have other like damage to the eyes, like cataracts, which I already have. Just wonder if you have input on, I think maybe that the public is not being made aware of the potential other harm to eyes and so much screen time.
Of course.
Do you want to comment?
No.
comment on that?
Yeah, well, that's an understatement, what the public is not being made aware of, but even if they are, there's something called cognitive dissonance that also basically keeps people, you know, by their choice, subconsciously in the dark, because to be confronted by these things means everything that they accept as normal and easy and, you know, is something that could be harmful. And many people don't want to see that and have to make adjustments and take responsibility for their health. They still are in the mindset that, you know, whenever this happens, I'll go to the doctor and they'll give me a drug for it or I'll do surgery for it. With eye diseases, you know, the most overlooked mineral, again, is selenium as the most protective mineral for the eye. And as I say, you know, 100% whole food form is what you need because you don't risk toxicity and you can take adequate quantities to get up to the protective layers or levels with selenium. You know, I use the innate response selenium for that.
Okay. Thank you very much. That helps.
No, that will help. I've had experience with it, and it really helps with the eyes. But honest, I don't know why my big screen is this color and the laptop is that color. But if I could figure out how to change the color on the laptop, I certainly would. And if you can figure out on your own computer, it's not your screensaver. It's when you turn it on, if the background is blue, I have a problem with even looking at that little guy. I always look at the screen. It's just more relaxing.
Yeah, so there's a night shift as well. You can change it at night so that the light changes at night only. You can program it into the laptop or desktop to do that for your screen.
Yeah, well, we'll all be calling you for a lesson on that one, buddy. All right, let's keep on keeping on. Ah, we have Catherine of the Desert.
Did you call me, Mel?
Yes, you are Catherine of the Desert, are you not?
I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry.
No, I'm enjoying listening to all the questions and answers, and thank you, Robert, for being on the show today. Really enjoy listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up, right now, let me figure this out. Okay. Let's see. Take a second. Okay, it'll take one more second. Oh, no. I am somehow lost here. Hold on one more second, guys. All right, so then, since it's not Linda, it has to be... I slipped my mind at the moment, but I know who this is. Area code 585.
It's Linda.
It is. Okay, well, every time you guys get a new phone number, I get all messed up.
We only have two phones.
Okay, well, I better write this number down, Linda.
Okay.
What would you like to say?
I was going to say I switched jobs, and at my other job where I worked in an assisted living place, they constantly sprayed disinfectant and all kinds of stuff like every 3 hours throughout the whole place, and there wasn't any ventilation at all. Like, they don't allow the windows to be opened, and all of the residents have gone downhill really, really bad. And I know that I didn't feel good when I left there, and I've switched jobs and I feel better. So I'm thinking that maybe that's why people there are getting sick. And I just didn't know if, you know, it was just a thought.
No, it's not. It's a good thought. There's already been medical papers, peer-reviewed papers released in this calendar year on the rise of, respiratory ailments and other ailments due to that very thing, the overuse and abuse of these antimicrobial agents in the air or on surfaces.
They're doing it.
There's
to
outgassing.
Prevent
there's direct.
There's nobody there with COVID, but they're doing it to prevent it. So it's like, it's crazy.
Well, yes, it is. But it's the germ theory run amok. We want to make everything aseptic. But if we lived in an aseptic environment, we would all die. And I've pointed this out before in my discussions of the germ theory. If the germ theory were an accurate model to explain how disease or infection occurs, there would be nobody alive to discover it, much less promote it. I mean, you just think about that. If the germ theory were right, because we got more microbes in our gut than we have cells in our body. And that doesn't even touch the number of viruses or exosomes that are on us and in us and around us all of the time. It dwarfs the number of bacteria and fungal species.
Mm-hmm.
So we're dealing with people that don't understand how life works.
Sounds like only a week or so later, you sound stronger than you have in a long time. I'll tell you that much. All righty. Thanks for the question. Good morning, Lee. Good morning, Lee.
Hi, Mel. Hi, Robert. I have a question about, like, working in a hospital or a clinic, and you're constantly using a sanitizer, and they enforce that between, you know, every patient, you use the sanitizer. What do you think of that? And what can be done?
I would rather wear gloves and take off the gloves, throw them away, and put on a new pair of gloves every time than use so much hand sanitizer on my body, because, you know, what they're using is typically toxic, whether it be benzyl alcohol or denatured alcohol agents or other antibiotic or antimicrobial substances that destroy the microbiome on the skin, the layer of immunity on the skin, and dry the skin and create what we call leaky hands, much like leaky gut. You now are more vulnerable and more susceptible, not protected. You know, washing your hands with soap and water, not so big a deal, but using these toxic chemicals, that's problematic. And it's not like soap and water is not adequate. They've already done the analysis on that. And, you know, we talk about the use of silver topically. That's another excellent way to go. My buddy, Dr. Frank King, also has an alcohol-based, non-denatured alcohol-based cleansing, topical cleanser for hand sanitization if you want, so you don't harm the microbiome in the same way as with these, like benzalkonium chlorides and different things like that. So there are a number of options, but going back to basic soap and water would be adequate.
All right. Thank you so much. Terry, you have a question?
No, I don't have any questions, but I want to welcome you, Robert Scott Bell, and I enjoy every time you come to our calls, and your information you provide for us is just outstanding, so I want to thank you very much.
No, thank you.
All right, and then, welcome back. Greta, do you have a question?
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, yeah, you're fine.
Well, I've recently been discussing with Mel about one of the major symptoms I'm having, and I think it's a secondary to the inflammation response that keeps firing off in my body, because I do not have this illness in a balanced state. And have my body in a balanced state. First of all, I love the whole discussion about, you know, finding balance in the body. And I am totally on board of my body being a wonderful conglomeration of bacteria and, you know, there's fungal, there's all kinds of stuff living in my body. It's part of who I am. And just finding that balance is health. I totally agree with that. And but late, I wrote a note to Mel about I've had ADD my whole life. That's the label that the world has put on my brain. And I've been having horrific brain fog. And I exercise ardently. I use a rebounder. I swim. I do weights, I hike, and I am following Mel's protocol and drinking tons of fluids. But the brain fog is really disabling. And I have hesitation for following through on things. I don't even remember sometimes what I said I would do. Interestingly enough, when I work, I'm fine because I'm sort of, I guess my brain is entrained to be there and present. I'm doing the same thing over and over again. But I just didn't know if there was something else I could be taking or doing to help with this brain fog that I believe is because I'm still being, you know, my body's being stimulated over and over again and becoming inflamed. And I did go in and have some blood tests. And at the time, I had mastocytosis. And if you know about the immune system, mm-hmm. you'll know what that means. So clearly, my immune system has been hypersensitized. And, yeah, so that's my I see that as one of my biggest challenges is, you know, it takes a lot of planning to have to navigate ourselves through our world when we have this illness. And we need that prefrontal cortex working. Mm-hmm. And mine, for whatever reason, just isn't firing off. And I caused a lot of I lost my wallet yesterday, I think it was.
Did you find it?
No, I went to the bank and took out some cash this morning. I'm hoping it'll rise to the surface, but not yet. Yeah.
Did you look under the bed?
I don't have an under my bed. I have an inflated bed right now.
Okay. Well, so, let me just give a little background. Okay, how long have you been on the protocol?
Maybe a month or 6 weeks.
All right. So I sent her email to a couple of people, and I got some responses already, okay? Mm-hmm. But they both mentioned three of the nutrients in our protocol, and they mentioned that you got to tell her to be patient. A month is nothing over the course of the 18 months, 2 or so years she's going to be here. And brain fog is at its worst in the beginning. So I don't know, you know, not having the disease, if Robert can really answer that. If he wants, he can. But I know Peter can. So if it's okay with you, Robert, I'm going to let Peter go first.
Sure.
Go ahead, Pete.
Well, I've seen a body of study. First of all, hi, Greta. Glad you're here.
Hi.
And great question. Happy to hear. I mean, hearing your challenges. It's heart-wrenching because we all go through them. But I've seen a body of research, and we work on the microbiome in this community real hard of the gut. Serotonin, dopamine, some other neurotransmitters that are important to brain chemistry and reducing brain fog. We'll take those are actually made in the gut. Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, Robert, but I believe they're actually made in the gut. So when we improve the quality of digestion through Mel's protocol and the microbiome of the gut starts to thrive through you know eating fermented starches and other types of foods that are in the diet section here, we see those genes then expressing the serotonin and the dopamine gets the deficiencies. I believe, in my humble opinion, get increased, and then we see the brain fog reduced. That's my experience with it, Greta. And Mel, the other thing I would want to say for Karen, I would have you look into Dr. Bob Marshall. There's some work he's done on the significance of lutein and zeaxanthin to the deficiencies we have in those arenas. So alongside what Robert said, I've found that some people that take additional, not to go against his protocol, but when the time is right, zeaxanthin and lutein, for eye support, since we're so deficient, will really help. It's helped myself. It's reversed some of my myopia myself. And then the other thing I would want to say, Mel, for Lee, is that, and Robert, I just saw a body of literature stating that there's more and more triclosan being found in the nasal cavity of people, and triclosan is one of the active ingredients in antibacterial soap. So I concur with Robert. It's very important what he's telling you guys to just use warm soap and water and to not wash your hands 1,000 times a day and to avoid these antibiotic products. There you go. I hope you agree with that, Robert.
Yeah, Peter. I mean, the vast majority of these issues with brain fog are gut-related. And you know neurotransmitter production reliant on the gut microbiome. So that's part of the process of healing and recovery. There's another aspect to, you know, capillary delivery of nutrients, if you will, oxygenation. The production of nitric oxide plays a role there. It's not just a ginkgo biloba issue, you know, for microcapillary, micropore openings, but nitric oxide can facilitate that. And I've done a few shows recently on that with my good friend John Hewlett. You know, by there are certain botanicals, beets, of course, big time, in helping to produce nitric oxide internally. That will help with blood flow in the microcapillaries especially.
Well, the point I try to make to her at this point in time when she talks about this, that at this stage in her time frame in on and in the protocol, on her way to recovery, this is all very normal. But of course, when it happens to you, no matter what I try to tell you, it doesn't sink in, or it's not something that we can relate to, because nothing like this ever happened before. But it will get better. All you got to do is just keep on sticking with it, because everything takes time. It took a long time to get to where you are, and it's going to take some time, some, not necessarily a long, especially with the brain fog. We see that dissipate usually in the first 6 months, a huge amount, but it takes time. It's not going to happen in 4 or 5 weeks. All right.
Hey, Mel, so, Mel, can I ask Robert one quick question that might help?
Pete, I saved you for last. Just hang on.
Oh, okay, I'll wait.
Is there anyone I missed? If there's anyone I missed, hit star 5 now. Okay, go ahead, Pete.
Well, I have a question for Robert, but if I might make a quick comment, first of all, Robert, you're a breath of fresh air. I think we need to be having a more serious dialogue in place of the fear with COVID. I know COVID shouldn't be the topic here, but we do need to be discussing things in regards to that. And you're a breath of fresh air, Robert, because you always bring a global biblical perspective to health and to fighting disease. So, you know, I would have people ask themselves a couple questions in regards to finding clarity and truth with this so-called scamdemic, I call it. If people are really concerned about public health and safety, why don't they care about the fact that people eat garbage, you know, drink poison, mm-hmm. smoke cancer, you know, take prescription drugs, but think that toilet paper, hand sanitizer, and masks are going to protect them from this boogeyman coronavirus? This is a special kind of stupid, in my opinion. So I would have you guys ask yourself a couple ethical questions. When did we give consent to a change from us creating a government to serve us to us serving the government ruling over us? And if you really want to know who's really in charge, just think about who you can and cannot criticize. So, and then lastly, since you missed Robert's initial description, you know, I would ask one other question. You know, if this is a real pandemic, why does it require what Robert was trying to share with you? I hope I get this right, Robert. Why does it require faulty virus models, you know, rigged test results, 81% false positives, inaccurate news reporting, staged hospital overruns, and manipulated death certificates? And, you know, this government has shut down millions of small businesses, but doesn't lay off any government employees like me. You know, and when a state bans a dentist from practicing but deems it necessary for abortion clinics to stay open, it's not about your health, folks. So I would like to see more dialogue from people, Mel, and thanks for the opportunity to say that. And then lastly, I have a question. Robert, thanks so much for your wisdom. I always learn from you. And there are the specific – it's so helpful when I can come alongside you like this. It's humbling for me that you allow me to make comments alongside you. But I was wondering, you know, there's so many specific considerations with our disease that are unique to our disease that Mel has so eloquently made clear to his audience over the years, and I try to also, that you have to have the disease to have the insight. So I was wondering, Robert, if you could comment on the role that, you know, biometabolism has. I know for me, I concentrated on biliary sludge without a gallbladder. The role it has mm-hmm. in, you know, things like removing adrenaline and noradrenaline for those people that might have stress here, Mel, if they could improve through digestion. If you know of any foods or any strategies to get, you know, phosphatidylcholine and glycine and taurine, some of those things would help with biometabolism and reducing biliary sludge, because I think that's a big issue with our disease, how biometabolism removes those adrenaline hormones from the blood. I was wondering if you could comment on that. And again, bless your heart, brother. And Mel, thanks for giving me a chance to speak here this morning. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Well, that was beautifully said. And I appreciate those words and how you communicated them so well. You know, my my way of going about restoring integrity to the entire GI tract, which includes liver, gallbladder. We'll address in by the very definition what we do, the bile sludge scenarios as well. From a botanical perspective, I've talked about a blend made out of a family company in Idaho called Alta Health Products. They have the CanGest formula, C-A-N-G-E-S-T, and that's a powder. You put a level teaspoon in warm water three, maybe four times a day. Over the course of a couple of months, you'll see dramatic changes, and especially if you're concerned with liver, gallbladder, but it's the entire GI tract there. My more aggressive, rapid protocol for clearing up biofilms and everything else is the use of the silver hydrosol with the aloe vera, and that has proved to be the great accelerator in terms of tissue integrity, the lining of the gut itself, the home for the microbiome, etc. So there's a lot, it's all kind of a loaded question and loaded perspective that you've got there, and it goes deep into, metabolic imbalances, but for the sake of staying in the macrocosm a little bit, when we restore integrity to structure, we, by definition, restore integrity to function, because, the function is related or reliant upon the integrity of the structure. And it's not something we have to consciously think about. So if we know what it takes to restore integrity to structure, it's not like then you have to go, all right, what do I got to do to now make it work right? Well, it knows what to do. As long as, of course, you're just giving it what it needs, what do we need? The basic essential elements, the minerals that are absent in the food because the soils have been depleted, we need to find a way to supplement them into our bodies. And, as much as there are advances in scientific technology to take minerals and artificially chelate them and try to mimic what may happen in the body or in nature, it doesn't always work as well as we intend. And so finding the forms of particularly mineral supplements that are in a food form that the body can recognize and utilize, and this is how plants do it. They take it up from the soil via, interestingly enough, the microbiome in the soil, not to mention the larger animals like earthworms and things breaking these minerals down. But ultimately, we're relying upon bugs, so to speak, for the plants to use the minerals that they take up that are initially rocks and minerals that we can't necessarily eat and absorb the right way. We don't have a digestive system like that. But if you feed plants those things, they take them up and they are changed in form. Even though the essential elements are there, they're changed in form in a way that our body is designed to utilize, interact with, break down, and release. And that's part of the overlook when we get very high on our own technological cells and thinking we can synthesize this stuff and it's the same thing. So I know it's a long-winded journey, but I always like to bring it back to some basic concepts of how to correct this, all of these problems, including those specific issues.
Okay, well, since February 3rd, 2009, what we've preached is health restoration.
Mm-hmm.
Take care of the inside, and boy, the outside is going to take care of you. So, I think that's what first drew me to you, is that all you care about is helping people get healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with Peter. That's all Peter cares about, okay? And that we all give the glory to God. So
mm-hmm.
Let me just ask Anonymous No Speaky if he has a question, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Anonymous, you came in at 10:30. Would you like to ask a question? Okay. I hope you got something to show. Robert, is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, man. It's always good to come back and hang out with you. And Mel, I tease you and kid you because you're a love. You're amazing what you've done to set up this community to help so many. So I greatly appreciate you and all that you do. Even if I'm not here, I'm here. And hopefully this has been helpful for folks. And like I said, I appreciate once again everybody, in addition to once in a while getting together here, please don't hesitate to drop in and send me a message over at robertscottbell.com, or if you want to access some of the bonus stuff through the Patreon support, that's great. And if you have other questions, just let Mel know, and we'll follow up whenever we can.
All righty. Is there anybody that's got to have a question answered before we call it a day? All righty. Thank Peter for coming by, and and additional insights and understandings. Like I said, nobody knows what's in the protocol better than Peter, except maybe John. Oh, I just want to say that we have a new contest sponsored by Natural Genesis. The post is up and probably in your email. We'll be back tomorrow with a prayer and fellowship. Those who wish to join us, all are welcome. You know, I don't know what's going on next week. I'm sure something. And I know Kathy will be here on the she'll be here on the 5th of December. And in between, I figure John and Peter and I will get together. But I'm going to make us with no mask. No mask.
Yes.
Because none of us want to wear a mask. Because we're only breathing carbon dioxide. Why do they want us to poison ourselves? Anyway, God bless you all. Let's say a big thank you to Robin, Peter, on the count of 3, 2, 1. Thank you, Peter
thank
and Robin.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks thank you. All right.
Bye-bye, everybody. Have a great day.
Bye.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Take care, everybody.
You too.
Okay, Chrissy, are you still here? Yeah. Freddie Bean, are you still here? No. Yeah, you are. Good. No, wait. Oh. All right, well, I'll have to catch him tomorrow. Send him an email. All right, let's see who's here. Anonymous, that's the one who came at 10:30. You want to say anything? I hope you got something out of the call. Okay, you're gone. Let's see. 316, 316. Who's that? Oh.
Miles.
Yeah, okay. Wait a second. Do you have anything you want to ask? Well, yeah. You and Joe are here, and I'm brain dead. I got brain fog. Oh, no, not that. All right, boy. let's talk about food. Why don't you go first, Miles, because then Joe can answer some of these thoughts or give you his insights.
Hi, Miles. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Just so happy to have you part of the community and posting. And I try and catch up on post reading, but there's so much out there. And your posts are just so detailed and so colorful and visual. So thanks for doing that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And that's kind of where a lot of my questions come from. So I started on, page 35 or whatever it is of the forum. And depending on when the timestamp is, there's conflicting information on there. So on one post, I'm trying to remember which food it was specifically. It was okay, but then on another post, it wasn't. And I think it was some kind of grain.
Yep. Not mistaken. Yep. Yep. I know what you're. I know what you're referring there too. I think one of the grains, it may have been a different one, but one of the grains called in kind of with a pro and con or a conflicting responses. The ancient grains brand, I know, is one of them. Not sure if that's the one you're referring to, but I've read that a few different places. So we can definitely talk about grains in general, because I know that was part of your email and questions, like with grains or oats, lentils. And just so you're aware, and I wasn't sure if you're on the call a couple weeks ago, I've been doing whole plant-based for 4 years, so I'm very familiar with those type of foods, so I'm happy to talk about them.
Yeah, and I'm not a stranger to them per se, but as far as the nutritional value, I'm a fool. My wife is actually the health nut until this happened, and now I'm all of a sudden the health nut.
it kind of stinks, and that kind of in this case it really stinks that it took, unfortunately, something like this in your life. You know, I would never, my wife goes through this, and I would never wish this on my darkest of enemies, but you know, to get more involved with nutrition is overall a silver lining at the very least, and knowing what's out there and how food can be tainted and what it does and really how it interacts in our body. So I want to give you just a couple pointers that I've learned along the way that I think can really help here. And Mel, if you want to interject, please go ahead. Mel said something to me the other day we were talking about it, and I want to repeat that in terms of grains. However, you hear him talk about berries and blueberries, and even though those are carbs and we do have sugar in those natural sugars, Mel said something that hits really hard, which is the benefits from the nutrition, the fiber, and the antioxidants outweigh that potential impact from sugars, because these type of foods are meant to be in our bodies. They help balance the body. They help balance pH levels to the digestive tract, the fiber itself, to keep the body regular. And at the very end of the day, they also control the blood sugar. So even though there's sugar in it, those foods help control the blood sugar. And I'm a firm believer that those benefits outweigh the potential of what the sugar could potentially do in terms of a Herx or something. Mel, does that kind of sum up appropriately what you and I talked about a little bit? Maybe it just does. But
yeah, you made it the way.
Okay, no problem. But that's what I feel in terms of the information, the foods you were asking about, the good carbs, so to speak, and the good grains. For me, I still would love to see people in their nutrition, even with this toxic disease, to try and incorporate, if they can, even as little as they can, stuff like lentils, brown rice, whole grain steel-cut oats, because those benefits are, it's a plethora of benefits for the body. I mean, you just feel good and feel better. And again, I have to speak that I don't have this disease, so it's hard for me to say if I were to have a bowl of steel-cut oats, am I still feeling those benefits more than, or am I feeling like something's happening in my body and it's not liking it? So that's kind of the overall question with those things. Everybody's body is different, which I think why we have this conflicting information in posts. I think for someone, it works for them. But for someone else, depending where they're at, it may not work for them right away. So that's something I know Mel has talked about with Peter, as well as when it comes to that fine line, even with good foods, is there's nothing wrong with trying it out and seeing what happens.
That's why I tell you to keep a food log. And that's why I tell you, when you try something new, you don't need a shitload of it. You just try a little bit.
No. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so then, I guess that answered pretty much all the questions I had, except there was one more.
Yeah, go for it.
With mushrooms. There's something to do with mushrooms that people don't like. What's the story? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Okay. So I'll have to read up on that, but like is that in any format?
Well, I don't know, bro. I'm lucky, in my opinion. I've been allergic to mushrooms since birth. When I would have mushrooms put in food by adults when I was young, I would get like a little purple mark on the side of my neck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I don't eat them, but according to Peter and John, I mean, think about where mushrooms mostly grow, and in a fungal environment, damp and wet.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are not going to really be good at this point in our lives. You got to probably cut mushrooms out.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that too. Mushrooms have, again, it's a great type of food with benefits, a ton of vitamin A and iron, which is wonderful. But just like Mel said, that's a food where I feel the disadvantage of where they're grown, how they're grown. It literally is. Mushroom is part of the fungi family. It is fungus. It's probably more susceptible than most whole plant-based foods for having mold in it, and we don't want that. We do not want to put mold in our body. I would definitely agree with Mel. We don't keep it in the house here anymore, and I used to be a big mushroom eater, but we just, and then my wife likes them too, but we just don't buy them anymore.
And it wasn't a staple of our diet. It was just something that complemented it. So, cutting it out is not a big deal. It's one clarification.
Okay. Yep. I would agree with that.
All right.
Mel, I know you had stepped away for a moment. You probably heard, though, I want to get your thoughts, because, again, I don't want to Okay.
I took the 40 phone and turned it on in the other room.
Okay.
But I can't tell you what I went for because you both will kill me. I have cravings that you guys dream, well, he'll dream about because he's probably missed some of the things already. But just suffice to say that I didn't have Häagen-Dazs ice cream for 5 years, my most favorite thing on earth. And this year, I haven't had 3 pints the whole year of Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream. So what I went for can only be had in moderation. Yeah, well, but you can have everything. You just got to do it differently because too much of some of that stuff is why you got sick anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Now, believe it or not, by accident, I left this tape recording on.
Oh,
so you guys have to sleep. You guys have to sleep on this. If I make this an add-on to the call or a separate call, it's only 15 minutes.
Sure.
But there's a lot of good information here, but I don't want to put either one of you in a bad position.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I don't mind.
That's fine. So, Miles, do you enjoy those type of foods? Has that usually been a part of your dietary or nutrition, like lentils and brown rice, you know, more of the whole plant-based carbs and grains? Because, I mean, I think, honestly, just a little, like Mel said, a little bit of each can still fill up your plate pretty well without missing too much. And then just loading the rest of the plate with every green, colorful vegetable you can think of, lots of dark leafy greens. I go through about 3 or 4 pounds of spinach a week. That's just a week. But plenty of things that you can have.
It always has been a part of the diet. I think the biggest part of the change for me is cutting out the meat, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm in Kansas, so meat's the main part of the meal for most around here. But that's been the biggest change.
Wait, what do you mean cutting out the meat?
Well, not completely, but going from how much I was eating.
Okay, how much was you doing?
My
phone actually, my call ended, so if you're still talking, apologies for that. I just cut out for like 2 minutes or a minute.
Okay, how much meat were you eating?
I would say it was probably just about in every meal, honestly.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Let's get clarity. Got to have clarity. It's important. So you're telling me that you had meat in the morning, meat at lunch, and meat at dinner?
Well, and if I didn't, so let's say like breakfast, there would be some type of protein there. If it wasn't meat, it would be a hard-boiled egg or egg over easy or whatever you want to call it. But then for lunch, it may be a deli meat sandwich or something like that. And then for dinner, it could be, I don't know, I'm just, you know, guessing, but a roast or something. I don't know.
How many times a week are you eating meat now?
Total, probably 4. Actual meat? No, that's not counting like eggs or something like that. But actual meat, I'd say probably 4 times a week.
What do you think, Joe?
I was just going to ask that same question. It sounds like, at the very least, you've significantly reduced the amount of eating meat. You know, you went from, like you said, almost a meat-based, something meat-based almost every meal, that's 7 days a week, to 4 times a week. So that's pretty darn good in my book. I think some of the more practical guidance I've seen with reducing meat is maybe having it 2 or 3 times a week. And we've talked about it here before, you know, good quality meats, you know, grass-fed beef, no nitrates type thing, cage-free chicken. You want to have good quality cuts of meat. And
kosher. We want kosher.
Kosher's good. Yep. And one thing Peter had mentioned during the nutritional call was that I have to keep in mind is when we take out meat, meat has a pretty essential vitamin. It's B12. You can't get that outside of meat unless it's in a supplement form. So I have to take a B12 supplement because I don't eat meat, but it is a very essential vitamin that the body does need to help it helps with a good gut bacteria, if you will. So that's the one thing that you do get from eating good quality red meat. But, you know, again, moderation a couple times a week at most, maybe.
I think from going from 7 days, 21 meals, so let's say 19 meals a week to 4.
That's pretty good.
No, I think he can stay there, but he might consider getting a B12 supplement because of what she's not getting now that he's not eating meat every meal.
Right.
Because I take a B12 supplement every morning.
I still eat meat.
I probably eat meat 5 times a week now. When I was sick, I only ate it twice because I only trusted kosher, and I had hamburger one time and chicken breast the other. But more is okay, especially when you come from a place like he did. You know, he's a carnivorous creature.
Mm-hmm.
In the dinosaur day, he'd be a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Right.
All right, gentlemen. Any more questions?
No, I don't. And, you know, thank you for taking the time to answer some of my questions. I do appreciate it because I, like I said, you know, reading the forums, it looks like there is some stuff that had been updated and changed, things like that. So I just need a little clarification. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. More than happy. And thanks for coordinating it, Mel. This is great.
Well, the more you know, the better chance you got of getting better. It's just that
simple.
So, you know, I got 15 minutes before I fall asleep now. I'll be back at 3 because it's Saturday. Guys, have a
you all have a good weekend.
Talk to you
thank
later
you.
Tomorrow, and thanks very much.
You bet.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.